Good afternoon. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. Juneau's Democratic incumbent representative, Andy Story, now has an opponent in the race for her current seat in the State House, Annette Kreitzer, Haynes' former borough manager. Earlier this week, Kreitzer filed as a Republican to run for the District 3 seat. The seat represents Haynes, Skagway, Gustavus, and parts of North Juneau. If elected, Kreitzer says she would focus on issues ranging from public safety to the state's budget issues. She noted that her opponent has paid a lot of attention to boosting public education funding.
I think we have to have a concurrent conversation about how we raise the funds to do that. If you're all in for a full permanent fund dividend, for return to defined benefits, for funding for education, for transportation, for ferries, where is that coming from?
From her perspective, the answer is resource development, done responsibly.
And I think we have an opportunity with the Trump administration, whether people agree with Trump or don't agree with Trump.
Most recently, Kreitzer served as Haynes' top administrator. Kreitzer stayed in the role from 2021 until 2024, when she resigned just before her contract ended. Earlier that year, Kreitzer had received low marks during an evaluation from the Borough Assembly, the Chilkat Valley News reported at the time. The local newspaper reported that the low marks were due to a pattern of failing to seek approval from the Assembly on controversial matters or provide important information. Kreitzer acknowledges at least one high-profile instance where she sat on some information for too long, but she says she was trying to be efficient amid understaffing and wanted to ensure she had the full picture first.
Oh, you have to keep moving, otherwise projects would come to a complete standstill.
Prior to her stint in Haynes, she worked as a legislative aide, a chief of staff for Alaska Lieutenant Governor Lauren Leman, and commissioner for the Department of Administration under two Republican governors. Representative Story first took office in 2019 and is now running for a fifth term in the state legislature. This is KTOO. Good afternoon. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. After years of planning, the Central Council of the Tlingit Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska soft opened a casino on Douglas Island this week. It's Juneau's first casino. But as KTOO reports, the tribe might be taking a legal gamble by opening the site.
Let's go! Come on, Grandma!
Amber Forrester sits at the end of a long row of electric slot machines, pressing a bright white spin button on Wednesday afternoon. She's at Tlingit Haida's new Two Coppers Casino on Douglas Island. It's the first and only casino of its kind in Juneau, and one of the very few operating in the state.
Yes.
Forrester is a tribal citizen who casually games when she visits the lower 48. She says it's about time that Tlingit Haida cashes in on the economic benefits gaming can bring to communities.
Other casinos and tribes have proven the economic benefit of being able to have gaming and be able to take that funding and put it into schools, community service, helping our elders.
According to census data, after Congress passed the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act in 1988, economic conditions for Indigenous people on reservations improved significantly in the following decades. Under the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, tribe-owned casino revenue is required to support tribal economic development and welfare. However, very few tribes in Alaska have authority over land, so they haven't had a way to open reservation-style casinos like tribes in the lower 48. So many, like Tlingit Haida, have sought to assert authority over native allotments, like this one, owned by individual tribal citizens.
And now for our tribe to finally be able to take advantage of the opportunity is tremendous. It's really important.
Loud pop music and rows of 100 bright neon electric slot machines invite patrons into the building. The casino offers Class 2 gaming, which covers things like pull tabs, bingo, and slot-style electric machines. It doesn't cover games like poker or blackjack, and it doesn't serve alcohol.
We're really excited about this.
That's Chothlaish Richard Peterson, Tlingit Haida's president. Sitting at one of the many slot machines on Wednesday afternoon, he said the opening of the casino signifies a major step toward economic self-sufficiency and sovereignty for the tribes.
It's an opportunity, you know, expression of our sovereignty, but also I think it's a great economic opportunity for not only the tribe, but for people who want to work here.
The casino is located on Fish Creek Road, not far from Eagle Crest Ski Area on Douglas Island. It's just a small piece of a native allotment owned by tribal citizens who lease it to Tlingit Haida. rumors of the tribe developing something on that property has been talked about for decades. In August, the tribe confirmed with local media that it was building the casino, but it didn't share the opening date at the time. Shortly after, however, in September, the U.S. Department of Interior withdrew a legal opinion that gave Tlingit Haida and other tribes in Alaska legal jurisdiction over Alaska Native allotments. At the time, it was thought that the change would put the casino in jeopardy. The withdrawal marked a return to decades of precedent, where federal and state officials in Alaska have long said that land allotments given to individual tribal members in Alaska were not considered Indian country. Therefore, they're not under tribal jurisdiction and cannot be home to federally regulated gaming halls. However, according to Peterson, that isn't the case.
The legality is on our side.
He said that Tlingit Haida's lawyers reviewed the legal opinion and believe it does not impact the tribe's ability to open and operate.
We have jurisdiction here, so we're not doing anything illegal.
But whether that holds true remains to be seen. According to the withdrawal memo released in September, Tlingit Haida's approval for gaming needs to be reevaluated in accordance with the revocation. But as of now, the National Indian Gaming Commission hasn't done so. Other tribes in Alaska, like the native village of Aklutna, are similarly operating casinos on native allotments in a state of legal limbo. Aklutna is in the middle of an ongoing lawsuit with the state of Alaska, which filed a lawsuit to shut down the casino last year. Peterson said while he hopes the state doesn't sue Tlingit Haida, he's not counting on it.
There's nothing without risk. There's just not in this world. You can do anything and somebody may challenge you. The state of Alaska, unfortunately, their track record is suing tribes. Their track record is also not winning.
Peterson said despite the legal challenges that may be on the horizon, he's excited. He said the casino scratches the surface of what he envisions for the property.
I would love to see us do a nice small hotel and kind of like a day spa situation that, you know, maybe you want to bring your partner up and have a nice weekend.
He says the tribe plans to feed off the large number of cruise ship passengers and crew that visit Juneau, along with residents and independent travelers, to generate revenue at the casino and reinvest it into essential tribal programs and services. The casino is still in a soft open phase, and there's a lot more work to be done on the site, like getting running water and paving the large dirt parking lot. Peterson said the tribe plans to officially open its doors on July 1st. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson. And the National Science Foundation plans to yank a long-standing ocean observation station from the seafloor far off the coast of Alaska next year. It's one in an entire ocean monitoring system slated to be dismantled as part of the Trump administration's rollback on federal science programs that help researchers study the changing climate. KTOO's Alex Solomon has more.
Ocean Station Papa is located more than 2.5 miles beneath the water's surface in the Gulf of Alaska. Removing this monitoring station could make it harder to study ocean warming events like a combined marine heat wave and El Nino that could ramp up in the Pacific this summer. That's according to Russ Hopcroft, chair of the Oceanography Department at the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
It's an unfortunate time to have something being pulled out of the water with all these predictions we're hearing about this super El Nino coming. And this is, you know, one of the important sentinel sensors in that system.
He says it's a unique station. It began during the Cold War and has one of the longest running data sets in the North Pacific. It's anchored to the ocean's bottom in the middle of a rotating current system called the Alaska Gyre. The gyre is a major driver of regional weather, and it influences fisheries and ocean acidification, since it forces deep, nutrient, and carbon-rich offshore waters to the surface in a process called upwelling.
The advantage of having a mooring like that out there is you get that all that high-resolution data, not just at the surface, but through the whole water column.
Scientists have used data from PAPA to understand the effects of marine heat waves like the Blob from 2014 to 2016 that decimated some fish populations and killed seabirds and marine mammals across the Pacific. Seth Danielson is an oceanography professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks who studied the heat wave. He says he couldn't have done that without measurements of deep ocean temperatures.
We wouldn't have been able to know how much heat actually was in the ocean during the time of the Blob.
He says the University of Alaska operates other ocean floor stations closer to shore, but none as far out at sea as PAPA is. In addition to tracking ocean temperature, he says PAPA tracks salinity, pressure, water chemistry, nutrient concentrations, and more. Danielson says that's important for fisheries managers who look at long-term ocean conditions when planning catch limits for fisheries in the Gulf of Alaska.
Ocean Station Papa is just one of those key sites that has consistent data that stretches over many decades.
Mike England, a spokesperson for the National Science Foundation, said in an email to KTOO that the federal government isn't canceling the Ocean Observatories Initiative. He said scaling back the program is part of the foundation's wider strategy of a, quote, nimbler approach to prioritize support for evolving scientific priorities, end quote. It's unclear how the initiative will operate once the foundation pulls all of its stations out of the ocean over the next couple of years. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And the developer of the Alaska LNG project released its first specific public cost estimate yesterday for the proposed 800-mile gas pipeline and associated infrastructure. The developer, Glenn Farn, told state senators it's estimated the full project will cost between $44.5 and $54.5 billion. The first phase of the project, that's the pipeline itself, is likely to cost between $13.2 and $16.9 billion, according to the company's estimates. Glenn Farn, Alaska head Adam Prestige, presented the figures to Senate Finance Committee yesterday morning during a special session called by Governor Mike Dunleavy to consider tax cuts for the project.
What we've done here is present the numbers that we think represent actual construction costs for the project.
Cost projections have been a sticking point for skeptical legislators. As recently as Tuesday, Glenn Farn refused to release its internal estimates, saying that they could compromise negotiations with suppliers and customers. Glenn Farn has repeatedly sought to reassure Alaskans that the state would not be on the hook for cost overruns. But because the first phase of the project is slated to provide gas primarily for in-state use, legislators have said they're concerned cost overruns could translate to higher gas and electricity bills for homes and businesses on the Rail Belt. Republican Senator James Kaufman of Anchorage spoke to those concerns on Wednesday morning.
People ask, well, why do you even care? It's Glenn Farn's problem. There's kind of a yeah, but there. It's true in a way, but then the impact of that is cost to the consumer.
In an attempt to reassure lawmakers, Glenn Farn told legislators it supported legal language barring cost overruns from being borne by Alaska ratepayers. This is KTOO. I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in.